My Family Recipe is a new podcast from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network, bringing you cherished heirloom recipes and the stories behind them. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, welcome to Japanese. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York. And this show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deal in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi, ramen, izakaya, but what exactly are they? The Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Christopher Houghton, who is the executive chef at 367, 367 it means, in Nagano Prefecture. After graduating from the New England Culinary Institute, Chris worked at notable establishments, including Mandarin Oriental Hotel in Washington, D.C., Andaz Hotel Tokyo, and Inoue in Tokyo, which was one of Asia's 50 best restaurants. Nagano is known for its beautiful mountains and hot springs, and very importantly, great local produce. And Chris naturally combines his Western culinary skills and experience with celebrated local food culture at his restaurant. So today we'll discuss how he got an opportunity to cook in Japan, his idea of Japanese cuisine and how he expresses it, what he has discovered in Nagano's unique food culture, his close relationships with local farmers, and much, much more. But before we start, Japanese is available on Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japanese. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Now, let's start a conversation with Christopher Houghton. Hello, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you.
So you're in Nagano, so sorry that you're late at night. But First of all, yeah, it's really late. So first of all, where are you from and what did you eat when you grew up?
I'm from Fairfax, Virginia, which is really close to Washington, D.C. And when I grew up, whatever mom or dad was cooking, but I had a lot of access to my parents taking me out to different types of cuisine and food. And I think when I finally got into food, my mom would take me to farmer's market and kind of show me around there and ate from that area.
Wow. Amazing. So that sounds like you are in a similar situation as you are in Nagano, close to good produce.
Very similar, yes.
Wow. So then how did you actually get into cooking? Like, seriously into cooking?
So seriously into cooking, when I was in high school, I had taken all of the culinary programs that were available. In fact, when I was a senior in high school, I did like one class where I would actually go to work at a golf club. And from there, I took a year off after working after graduating and really thought that was my direction to go, and went to cooking school, and from there just cooked. So I think from maybe the age of 15, I really got into cooking.
Wow. Okay. And then after working at great restaurants and golf clubs, all those great experience, you went to Japan in 2014 and became a sous chef at the Taban Grill within at Andaz Hotel in Tokyo. So why did you go to Japan?
So my first experience with anything Japanese was when I first graduated from cooking school. I worked at the Mandarin Oriental in Washington, D.C. And the opening chef was a Japanese guy, Hide Yamamoto-san, and he had a staff of maybe 10 plus other Japanese members, and that was my first really exposure to anything Japanese. And he left to go actually open Mandarin Tokyo. So in 2004, I took a trip to see Japan and had the connections at Mandarin Tokyo, and was really amazed and impressed. And from that point, tried to figure out how to get over here.
Wow. Right. And then that worked out. So, and then you had someone, connection with the Andes Hotel when it opened in Tokyo?
So when I first got over here, I had a connection through a spider web of people to get over here. And finally, my resume landed in the lap of the executive sous chef at Andaz at the moment, and got a call that, hey, we can support you. So I was able to come over.
Nice. Wow. So you spent there for 3 years, 7 months. So what did you learn from the experience?
This was the first time, working in Japan. And I think it was a bit of a culture shock when I first came over here. Visiting Japan, you see everything so clean and crisp to the customer face from a restaurant perspective. And you really get into the nitty gritty of what it's like to work in Japanese culture. And it's kind of eye opening coming from a Western perspective, what's expected and how you treat your senpai, the people that are older than you or younger than you. And I think one of the weirdest things was coming here is the first thing that anybody asks you is, how old are you? And they kind of try to size you up to how they should I respect you, or should I kind of teach you what you should be doing?
Right. Interesting. Yeah, that's really interesting, right? Because like Japanese education, everything is very standardized. And when did you join company, that kind of thing still is a basic structure of people's mindset, which is kind of surprising. Me spending a lot of years outside Japan, it's still there. And it's kind of probably good to maintain all those harmonious relationships, but yeah, it's very different, and it's interesting you said that. Okay, and now you learned how to deal with all those things.
Yeah, and it was a good learning experience. I have a very, now I don't, but before I grew a beard, I had a very baby face, so people thought I was a lot younger than I was. So people took me as, maybe I should teach you what you need to do.
Right. So the key is grow your beard. What about the woman? Right. And then you worked at, in 2018, you joined Inua to work for Thomas Rebel, who spent a decade heading up research and development of for the Rene Redzepi's Noma, which is one of the top restaurants in the world. No question. So how did you join Inua?
So it all goes back to the fact that Noma did their pop-up in Japan in 2015. I, of course, wanted to try to get reservation. Impossible. And then, several years later, there was an Instagram post that says, hey, we're opening a restaurant, and not so much information, but it was tied to Noma. And I was really interested and hesitant at first. And then finally threw my hat in the bin and said, okay, hey, let's try to do this. And I went for an interview 1 week before they opened. So they already had an opening staff, but with my visa and the fact that I was already in Japan, they took me on as an intern. So it was interesting because for 2 months I worked both Andaz and Inua, staging at Inua. So mornings I would work at Andaz and nights go to Inua. And then after 2 months, they pulled me aside and said, would you like to join our team? And that was the day that I gave notice to Andaz and took some time and then joined with them.
Wow. Well, that 2 months of sleepless days that we worked
out. It was very much worth it. It was very much worth it.
Right. Yeah, I think you almost spent 4 years at Andaz Tokyo. So you contributed enough and you had to move on. And it was perfect timing.
Yeah, so, it really was.
Wow. Right. Well, unfortunately, Inua had to close in March 2020 due to COVID and many other reasons I heard. But what did you learn at Inua, which is a very unique restaurant, right?
Super unique. So I joined the team really interested in the fact that there was this whole fermentation aspect of the restaurant. Something that I was interested in from years and years ago before coming to Japan. I had tried to brew beer or brewed cider in my own house in the States and to some degree of success. But the fact that they were doing everything, we had 7 different chambers with all different temperatures and humidities and really diving deep into that entire world of fermentation was something that interested me and what I wanted to focus on when I went there.
Right. So fermentation, I think it's been a keyword for many reasons, for the flavors and also health benefits, and it's very important. So did you use the classic, like traditional fermentation techniques to apply to this kind of modern style of cuisine?
So what was interesting while we were at Inua was the fact that we were taking modern twists of fermentation on classic things, you know, so kimchi, but kimchi with flowers or any kind of vinegars. We had a katsubushi vinegar that we would produce. So it was these classic ways of making flavors and different products, but with a different eye on it. And I think that was one of the biggest things that I learned from Inua was taking classic ideas and having completely different approaches of how to get to those flavor profiles that you classically think of.
Interesting. Well, I think you brought it to your new restaurant, which we're going to discuss in a moment, but that's amazing. That sounds like, as a chef, it's almost like a transformative experience with Chef Thomas Rebel.
Yeah, you know, one thing I've talked with several people that have gone through with us at Inua was the fact that, you know, there's so much going on. I don't think that this is somewhere to a young chef that's just learning to cook, learns to cook. It was more an experienced chef learns how to open his mind and look at the food world and culture in a different perspective.
Right. Interesting. I mean, I think this whole René Redzepi, his book about fermentation, everything, it keeps inspiring many people in the world, so culinary or beverage world. So, yeah, that's amazing that you were there in a very short period of time, 2 years. So you are a very lucky person.
Thank you.
And so in November 2020, you became the executive chef at the Matsumoto Jujo, which is a multifunction project by a super cool company called the Jujin. And 367 is a part of the whole concept. So first of all, what is Matsumoto Jujo? I think our listeners should know about it because it's such a fascinating project.
So we're located in Matsumoto, Nagano. in the specific area of Asama Onsen. This area has over 750 years of history, and the actual building that we're in, Koyanagi, has over 350 years of history. And basically this project of what we're doing at Matsumoto Jujo is to kind of revitalize the area. There's a small onsen town of all these integrated hotels and businesses, and really trying to drive back what that area meant and what it was over the years.
Right. Yeah, and the owner company of Matsumoto Jujo is called Jiyujin, and its corporate mission is ecological, creative, organic. We are designing lifestyles, and they really walk their talk because they publish a lifestyle magazine, grow rice, and own another hotel in Niigata Prefecture before they opened Matsumoto Jujo, right? So, yes. Yeah, it's just a fascinating concept, and I think the founders are actual designers and the, you know, college students, what I heard. So how did you become the executive chef at Matsumoto Jujo?
So you just mentioned the fact that they grow rice. So every year they have an event where they plant rice, and again in the fall they harvest it. And during these two times a year, they have an event in Niigata at Satoyama Jujo, where they invite a handful of Michelin-starred restaurants to join in the whole process. So in the first year that Inoue was open, our restaurant was asked to join that whole process. And I had the opportunity to go out to Niigata and plant rice. So that was my first introduction to the Jujin group. Then the restaurant was in a holding period, Inoue, and actually Thomas Friebel was out in Niigata assisting Satoyama Jujo, because it's one of his favorite places to be, and the chef there is a very good friend. So he said, he called me one day and said, "Hey, they have this new project, and your name came up through the way. Let's have a conversation about what's the options, what you should do here." And that was kind of where it started.
Wow. Oh, that's very exciting. You did, the rice planting and harvesting, what was the idea? Because it's just the symbolic, work to represent Japanese essential agricultural work. So it's like a soul of Japanese food culture. And you participated in it, and probably your hands got messy and murky and those things. So what do you think about that?
Oh, I think it was a lot of fun. It was the first time going out there and planting and seeing the whole process, and being able to come back in the fall and see what the whole process had gone through. You know, living in Tokyo the whole time, you're so far removed from these actual farms. But to see from spring or from, early, late spring to fall, the whole process, and now moving out here to Niigata or Nagano and seeing the entire process, as you walk to work or as you're walking around or as you're driving, it's just, you feel more rooted in what you're doing, seeing that whole process.
Right. So maybe that's the feeling that drew you strongly to Nagano. But was it okay for you to move from big, metropolis Tokyo to a small town in Nagano?
So I have to say, so when I was first presented with the idea, I had been to Satoyama Jujo, and it is very countryside. There is not much around. So my image of coming to Matsumoto Jujo was, this might be in a similar setting. So I was a little apprehensive when I first came out, but I was invited to come check out the property and found that actually this is a bigger city. You know, people only really know about, you know, Osaka, Kyoto, and Tokyo. But when you get down to some of these smaller, bigger cities, they have just as much as any other area has. You just have to find it.
And it's not too far, right? Like by train, it's not gonna take all day or anything by train, no, like 4 hours.
On the Azusa line, you can get to Tokyo in 2.5 hours, so it's relatively close for even a day trip.
Right. Okay. Well, remember, our listeners are going to see you. So
yes, please.
Right. Okay. So, so your restaurant, but your restaurant has an interesting name, Sanrokuna. So, what does that mean?
So Sanrokunana, so we write it 367, and then we have parentheses 365 plus 2. So what it means is the fact that 365 plus 2, so 365 days of the change of season. Every day there's something new. And now being out here in Nagano, you really see, like, you go to these small little farmers markets and they have something there for 3 days and they're like, no, that's all we have. So you get these hyper seasonalities. So it's really quite interesting. And then plus two is culture and history. So it's taking into consideration the culture and the history of the area as well, and trying to reflect that in the cooking. And then all of that combined, 367, is actually the how many kilometers long the Chikamagawa River and the Shinanagawa River is, which is our inspiration for the restaurant, which is basically following the river from through the Shinano area out to the outlet just in front of Satoshima Island, and trying to utilize the product from the start of the river all the way to the finish.
Right. Wow. So it's the actual physical geographical number plus everyday seasonal change plus that plus two is culture and probably the history. So this short name, there's so much packed in it, and it's fascinating. Right. Okay. So what is the theme of your restaurant, Sanrokunana?
So to follow along what the seasonality is and the how the river cuts through the through the area that we're living in Shinshu area. So following everything from what we can find in the mountains and in the forest to the low-lying plains all the way to the outlet in front of Satoshima, where we can get some of the best fish and that I've seen. And now is the season for sawara, and that's probably my favorite fish to have on the menu right now.
Right. Yeah. So it's kind of like, the Shinshu is very rich by itself in terms of what the land can produce, but it's really well connected, right? Because it's a kind of the center of Shinshu, which is, I mean, facing the Japan seaside, and also that a lot of things come from the Pacific Ocean too. So it's such a rich, beautiful area, even if it gets very cold and mountainous. It's kind of, I think Japanese people have a very romantic idea of living in Shinshu.
Yeah, you know, even this area, I've talked to a lot of people and they compare this area to Colorado. I've never actually been to Colorado, but from people that have visited overseas or foreigners that know They very much compare this to Colorado and the amount of richness and land. And, you know, even from my house looking out, you're just surrounded by mountains. So it's really quite beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I heard your menu really featured a lot of vegetables rather than like meat, just reflecting what's available from nature, right?
Yeah, I think I took a very much page from my time at Inua, and there was one thing that was always quoted quite heavily is the fact that when the land is giving us all of this wonderful product of vegetables to use, use those. When it's winter and the sea is amazing, let's use a bunch of fish. So, you know, it just depends on what's available. But I also think that what I was drilled into my head at Inua is that, you know, fish, seafood and meat is easy, but doing something interesting and unique with vegetables really makes people open their eyes, you know, to how did you make that taste? I hate that vegetable, but that was delicious, you know?
right. Interesting. Right. So because it's really well grown, then by itself, you realize why people started eating it in the first place. So,
yeah.
And, well, I found that this Japanese kind of phrase, the homepage of Matsumoto Jujo uses this phrase, describe the style of cuisine, jimi dakedo jimi, means it looks almost unnoticeably ordinary, but profoundly delicious. So that's really such a fascinating idea. You eat ingredients by itself. I think that's the essence of like Nagano cuisine.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at some of the dishes we serve, there's four or five ingredients in it, but it's just the quality of vegetables that we get that really shines through and allows us to not touch it so much.
Right. Only inevitably, I have to ask, do you use fermented food, a lot of fermented items?
Yeah. We have a lot of connections with local producers that are producing their own for us, misos and shoyu and sake. But internally, we produce a lot of our own lacto ferments. Right now, we're working on an end of season green tomato, lacto fermented green tomatoes. And then there's a marriage of things in my cooler of ferments and things that I've worked on that are just waiting for the right menu item to take them out on.
Mm, right. Well, I can't wait to come and eat your fermented items, including everything else. Right. Okay, so we'll take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll discuss Chris' philosophy of cooking in Nagano's unique food culture. So please stay with us.
Good food is worth a thousand words. This is Aarti Menon, and I'm delighted to share a new podcast with you, My Family Recipe, from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network. Adapted from Food 52's much-loved column of the same name, the My Family Recipe podcast will bring its pages to life. Each episode of My Family Recipe brings you a cherished heirloom recipe and the story behind it, from voices across the world of food.
We'd open these tubs of dough and they would exhaust these incredible yeasty fumes, and it just smelled like nothing else. It was so intoxicating.
I'll interview writers and chefs, parents and children, about what's passed down along with the foods that we know and love.
Chinese people aren't like born with a download on how to like velvet chicken. You know, like that's not something that just like comes to you.
Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japanese. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, and my guest today is Christopher Horton, who is executive chef at San67 in Nagano Prefecture. So the theme of your restaurant is local cuisine, and And also, like you mentioned briefly before the break, you have an extensive network of producers in the area. So how did you become a part of the local food community?
So it's a combination of things. Through the current hotel that I'm with Matsumoto Jujo, they had a couple people that they were already in contact and getting supplies from. Them having their own magazine, they have connections with a couple people in the area. And through Inoue, we had done projects throughout the years, throughout the 2 years, to find out about more products in the area. So I connected with one of the gentlemen that was researching this area, and he connected me with several different people. And basically, it's just been from this point, asking each person that I get introduced to, hey, do you have a friend or somebody that has this or has that? And just extended, you know, in 1 year, I went from knowing a handful of people to knowing, you know, having a laundry list, you know, 25 plus different farmers for different seasons, for different products. And it continues to grow as I ask questions as to, hey, you have 10 kilos of this, but do you have other friends that have also?
Right. Wow. I'm sure they're pleased to be asked, right? Because they're so proud of their products.
Of course. Even today, I just had the people that do our laundry for our sheets in the hotel rooms. She brought us a box of apples, three different types, and I can get more if you need. So it's just those little kinds of things that you know, you don't get in Tokyo. People are so much more open out here.
Right. It's a community you can never find in Tokyo, yeah, for sure. Right. Okay. And so it's hard to say, but right now, what's your local ingredients that you really like, and how do you use them on your menu? Like, just give us some examples.
Some local products. Our apples right now, we are getting in apples because on site, we also have a hard cider program that we just started 2 or 3 months ago, and we're bottling and should be released in the next couple weeks. But that apple we get and we make the cider, but we feature on our menu as a kind of apple tart de thon with a nice miso. But wow, when we're producing the apple cider, all of the leftover pressings go to our heritage pig farm and they eat those. And then we have that on our menu as our main course at the moment. So of a mixture of different products, but yeah, it's just quite amazing.
Right. Well, the pork must taste really nicely, kind of fruity, sweet, the kind of meat that can offer you.
It's so good. And the fat is like, you can cut it like butter and it's not greasy at all. Oh, it's amazing.
Wow. Okay. By the way, I heard you used a wood oven, and in particular, fresh wood versus charcoal. So why do you like using wood oven, and why do you choose fresh wood?
So when I first joined, we were using a combination of wood and charcoal. And then I started to fall in love with the flavor that you get only from the wood. So I slowly phased out using any kind of charcoal at all, and really took a deep dive on trying to learn more about wood fire cooking, and started to work with our wood purveyor and switched up to use oak for most everything. And then when we're doing smoking, we use Yamazakura, cherry wood.
Right. Wow.
So yeah, it's just been amazing to try to figure out, and the depth of flavor you get from that, apart from using just charcoal, is night and day.
Right. But isn't it hard because as opposed to using charcoal, which is already made, you have to make charcoal. Like, you know, you can use fresh wood as source of flavor and heat, but you have to take care of wood as well as your cooking. So you're going to be very busy if you use the fresh wood in your kitchen, right?
I was actually just talking to a guest this evening that every week is a new learning experience. This week, before we got our delivery, it was raining, so the wood I have is a little bit wet. It takes 20 minutes, 30 minutes to make it into charcoal, you know? So, yeah, it's learning every day, but through every different combination of what and how things go, you figure out a different way to make things better as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, sounds it's really worth it for your own personal challenge and the flavor-wise. Yeah. So right now, who comes to your restaurant?
Actually, we have a lot of different people, all over age range. I was featured, I got stopped by a TV program here in Japan, You Are Nani Shushin, which is basically, why did you come to Japan? And that kicked up a lot of media, and we've had a lot of people come to check out the hotel from that program. But apart from that, we have a lot of people. Oh, it's fun. we have a lot of people that are actually from the Jujin group that love our hotel in Satayama and also in Hakone, and they want to see what we're doing. You know, we've been open just a little over a year, and the age range is all over the place.
Right. So, yeah, I think people look for more than just eating. Like this company, Motojujo, is expressing, people look for lifestyle. I think your place is one of the very few places you can actually experience and relatively easily distant from Tokyo. So that totally makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, we're really lucky to have all those different kinds of people. And there, like you said, there's people that come there for the restaurant or for the onsen or for the area to experience, because not only do we have our restaurant, but we have a bakery, we have oyaki coffee shop, and then we have a sweet shop as well. So there's a lot of different things for people to experience when they come out to visit us.
Right. Interesting. So you said mention oyaki. Oyaki is a regional snack, right? It's kind of flour-based baked food, and it can be topped with anything. It can be flavored with anything. So, oh, wow. So that's like a cafe of oyaki, and you can have nice break, tea break or something.
Exactly. Yeah. And we took an old building that was over 100 years old and converted it. So you get to enjoy a modern setting inside of a really classic building with exposed walls and everything. So it's a quite nice place to just take a relaxing break.
Right. Well, actually, Nagano, I visited my high school teacher a couple of years ago, and she bought all those old farmhouse and renovated beautifully. So Nagano is full of old ancient structures that could be available for renovation. And I was surprised how comfortable the house was and how beautiful things can be kept for such a long time.
Yeah. Yes. It's quite amazing.
So you, since you came from Tokyo to Nagano, which is a, as we discussed, dramatic change. Has anything changed in terms of your culinary or life philosophy?
I think when I think about my culinary philosophy is in Tokyo, you can get anything. In anywhere of Japan, you can get anything. Anything can be shipped around. But that's the thing. It gets shipped to you. All my producers are through my line account and just text them, oh, hey, we have this. Okay, I'll take that. And the next day, they're at my back door with the actual person that grew it, explaining to me, hey, this is, I just picked this 2 hours ago. And they're so proud. And to have that kind of interaction with them, I can feed off of their energy to put out the best product for the guest, because I have somebody that just spent the last 3-4 months raising this product to be able to give to me, to be able to give to the guest. And I think my philosophy of that is just the fact that I want to carry on the amount of energy that these producers have put into their product to the guest and not let anything go to waste.
Right. So you have a new mission as kind of ambassador for the producers. And it's amazing. You can never have that responsibility when you're working in a big city. So sounds like it's hard to go back without having that experience every morning, right? Your producers saying hi to you and they are proud what they're giving you instead of delivery person who's just, like a medium of shipping something.
Exactly.
So, right. Okay. And so what is special about Nagano's food culture to you personally?
I think that there's so much culture and history, all these different, you find out that there's a radish, but this radish from this specific area goes by this name and it's special to those people. And you find out these little pockets, and I've traveled around Nagano now quite a bit. There is one city that is just known for their lettuce, and the whole city and even like the prefectural group is just, we are lettuce town, you know? And it's really quite interesting to see all these little pockets that latch on to what their image of their area is. And they really try to promote it. Everything from different, from everything from sake to misos to vegetables. It's just really quite amazing.
Right. And there's a sense of pride, which is
so much.
Very healthy. Right. Okay. And by the way, so you are involved in this Nagano Prefecture project called Shinshu Gastronomy Tour that highlights the diverse culinary history in the area through a chef's perspective. So, indeed, Nagano is really rich in terms of food culture. So could you tell us about this project and the video, which I'm going to put the link on my show page because it's amazing. So tell us about that.
Yeah. When I first got approached to do this project out in Matsumoto, Jujo, it was in conjunction with doing a project with the Shinshu area, Nagano and Niigata. And it was basically to be an ambassador for the area through a chef's perspective to show and highlight what's going on here, what people are doing. The video that you had seen is actually the second adaptation. The first one that we did was actually with one of your previous guests, Mary Beth Voiler. She came out this way, and we did another tour going through seeing mushrooms growing and nozawana and kind of the more east side of, or the west side of the Nagano area in the fall time. So the video that you had seen is our spring, our late spring to early summer video. And we have a great producer. He worked on the Tsukiji Wonderland documentary that really highlights what Tsukiji was all about before it moved to Toyosu. And actually next month we'll be going out and working with a couple chefs from Niigata and Nagano to highlight the winter season of the Shinshu area.
Beautiful. Yeah, so again, I put the link to the video on the show page, but it's called The Story of Terra, Shinshu Gastronomy Spring, where Chris introduced us to the essence of Nagano's culinary tradition with the really amazing producers. And so when once we go to this YouTube, and there are a bunch of other amazing videos with English subtitles. So yeah, I highly recommend listeners to check that out. So,
please.
Okay. Yeah. And so, I mean, you are really getting into the depths of Japanese hukkacho through Nagano and other aspects in Tokyo too. So you've spent 7 years in Japan now, right?
Yeah.
Right. So in your view, what is the essence of Japanese food culture?
I have to say, maybe that's changed over the years, but coming out to Nagano and really being a part of the community and looking at everything from a perspective of being here for as long as I have been, it's super about seasonality. The what's growing should be on the plate. What's going on should be displayed. And just trying to take the best of what's there and have people enjoy it. And whether that means to preserve it to use for another time period, or to serve it as fresh as you can, because that's when it's best. I think that's my essence of Japanese food culture and people being so in tune with it. You know, we just had the sake release for fall that I believe actually in your last podcast you were talking about Miyasaka-san, which is just an hour away from me, and his beautiful product that you got to try.
Right.
So it's just what's available now.
Right. So it's almost like a chasing the season. And typically there are 24 seasons in Japanese cuisine and Japanese culture. So instead of four. And
well, I was very much introduced to the 72 seasons that there are in Japan quite a number of years ago. And it's if any of your listeners have a chance, you should look up 72 seasons of Japan, because it's even hypersensitive.
Right. So there's 24, I think, divided into like three sections, and then people capture like 72. So yeah, that's really ultimate expression of Japanese seasonality. Yeah. So wow, that's exciting. So yes. So if our listeners want to go come to visit you, where can we find your updates online, social media?
So I'm out here working at Matsumoto Jujo in Nagano. And you can find myself and what's going on with me at Horton_Christopher on Instagram.
Okay. And then this is my final question. So what are your plans and dreams?
My plans and dreams is to continue to look at the local gastronomy image as to what it is and what it means, and really define for myself what it means to cook local gastronomy and have the opportunity not only here, but in the future, try to take that to somewhere else and have another perspective of what it means to cook somewhere else and really feed off of the area and continue to learn myself what it means to cook local.
Right. And there's so many places in Japan, like Nagano. And I know you speak really great Japanese, so that should be easy. All right. So thank you so much for joining us today, Chris.
Thank you. It was a pleasure talking with you. I was really looking forward to this all week.
Yeah, me too. So, keep us posted, and then hopefully you can come back, and I'm sure you're going to have a lot of updates. So in a year or sometime.
I would really like to do that.
Okay. All right. So listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or akikokatema.com. Japan Needs is a weekly program and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. And Jenny is Matt Patterson, and thank you for listening. I will see you next week. Japan Needs is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you for listening.